Hello, thank you all for joining us today. We have an exciting topic and two amazing guests with us. We have Brian Dietmeyer, the CEO at 5600 Blue and Think Inc. Prior to starting Think and 56 Blue, he was VP of National Sales Accounts for Marriott. He has been on the board of the directors for SAMA, was the chair of MPI Adult Education Foundation, and is the author of Strategic Negotiation and B2B Street Fighting. John Flannery is also with us. He is the president of Flannery Sales Systems. They have been in business for 12 years, helping companies to improve their sales results. They have a lot of happy customers. He sits on the marketing department board at San Diego State University, and as a sales veteran for the past 30 years, John knows what salespeople should be doing to be successful. John, Brian, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Kelly.
Of
Thanks,
course.
Kelly.
Of course. So today I want to talk to both of you about the emergence of a new function we are seeing a great deal of attention on recently, sales enablement. Although there's been a lot of buzz, studies have shown that in the last 3 years, we've actually seen a growth of companies reporting that they have this function grow from 19 to 33%. That's from CSO Insights. So for our time together today, I want to pick your brains about what is driving this emergence of sales enablement? What happens if you don't do it? And then to kick things off, because I still think there's a ton of confusion around what is sales enablement, for purposes of this discussion, let's come to a common understanding first. What is sales enablement?
I'll take that, Kelly. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all today as well. And I'm going to go back to CSO Insights definition. And it is a mouthful, this definition, but we'll break it down as we go through the podcast. And CSO says sales enablement is a strategic cross-functional discipline designed to increase sales results and productivity by providing integrated content, training, and coaching services for salespeople and frontline managers along the entire customer's buying journey powered by technology. So a lot of words in there in their definition, but it is comprehensive, and we'll go through what that means in this discussion.
Yeah, John, to that point, we recently looked at 10 different analysts as well as the emerging sales enablement society definitions on sales enablement. We looked at Forrester and Salesforce.com and Sirius and of course CSO Insights, et cetera. And here's the thing that we found is across all 10 definitions, there were three pillars, and it was really integrating content, technology, and sales training. So those three, even though surprisingly the definitions were similar, different words, but those three pillars talked about the integration of those three.
So sales enablement to me, based on that definition, sounds like a role any company would want to have. So what do you think is actually driving this to happen now?
I think this is Brian. I'll take that one. It helps for me to think about the emergence of sales enablement. I'll use the overused word of paradigm shift, but in 1982, it was Booz Allen that really introduced to the market this notion of supply chain management. And what Booz said is that purchasing was an isolated function within companies, and they realized that it needed to be a unified. Their exact quote was a unified and rationalized cross-functional capability, which is radically different than an isolated purchasing person buying. If you want to impact your value chain, you need to look at it and coordinate it across the whole company. That was a massive shift for procurement organizations. And Kelly, you asked about what happens if you don't look at sales enablement. Well, I think it's the same thing that would have happened to procurement organizations who didn't begin to think of their value chain as a unified and rationalized cross-functional capability. So, in our world, in the time I've been a sales leader and a sales consultant, there hasn't been a lot of big changes to how we prepare salespeople. And, you know, a few years ago with the emergence of insight, the general category of selling with knowledge, I think that's really driving us to really rethink how we prepare salespeople. And I think that's the shift in our organization that's akin to what happened in procurement.
I'll add into that as well, Kelly. The marketplace, sales leadership, executive leadership, is recognizing what CSO documents in their enablement optimization study. Win rates of forecasted opportunities are below half. They're at 49.6%. And 90% of the companies surveyed say that they are increasing the quota for salespeople. So they're expecting them to do more, yet the win rates are less than half. So I think that's catching people's attention as well. There's also a book written by Rita McGarth, who's a Columbia professor. It's called The End of Competitive Advantage. And what she talks about is the speed of change, how companies used to sit down to do annual planning where they chunk out these 12-month plans. And they would do that based on long-term sustainable competitive positions. Well, now technology, competition, everything is changing so quickly that organizations are finding they have to go and revisit these plans on a 90-day cycle and base it on short-term transient advantages. So taking into consideration reduced win rates, quotas are going up, and the need to refresh their competitive position or their annual planning, companies are realizing that they have to do something about it. It's straightforward. The systems that supported people were designed in an annual world, this 12-month block that just simply no longer exists. Something has to give.
If we go back to the definition of sales enablement, you talked about three pillars of sales enablement. I would like to talk to you guys about why each of these pillars are key to the success of this function. And if we can, let's just start with content.
Yeah, I'd be happy to take that one, Kelly. The content piece is interesting, and Brian cited in the opening this resurgence of insight selling and the need for the seller to be able to go in and lead with insight and let a buyer know that some part of their business needs to be addressed, some area that they were not aware of. And to be able to do that, you can go in and lead with that insight, but you have to have the content to back up the story. A 28-year-old salesperson speaking to a 55-year-old risk-averse buyer coming in and saying, here are the things that should be keeping you up at night. They need to make sure that they are ready and loaded for that conversation with the content to make sure they can back up the challenge that they're posing to that potential buyer. So it's the content is king in that regard in order to have that conversation.
Yeah, I think the other thing that we've seen, too, this emergence of insight selling, I believe is exactly the right way to go. I think anyone who says they figured it out is maybe that's not quite accurate. It's a brand new look at the way we've been selling, and so it's heading in the right direction. I just don't think it's always being executed properly. And to that end, one of the things that we've seen is that as it relates to probably the most important pillar of sales enablement, which is content, is that content needs to track with every stage of the sales process, from qualification to gaining access, to creating value, to negotiating, capturing value on the back end. So salespeople literally need to be armed with competitive weapons at every stage of the sales cycle. And the other thing that we've seen is it needs to be at the right level. So inside salespeople can also sell this way. Field salespeople can sell this way, and global account managers can sell this way. And the content will be different, and it needs to be built for them. One of the things that we've heard is that, you know, when you make this transition to insight selling, that you're going to lose 50% of your sales force, or 50% won't be able to do it. That's a problem with the solution. and if you get the content at the right level for the right people that's tracking with the entire deal cycle, you should not have to replace 50% of your sales team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the last thing I'd like to hit on content is that there's a really sort of damning statistic that just came out of American Marketing Association that 90% of the content from marketing is not being used by sales. And one of the things that as we've looked at that and said, well, why is that occurring? It really needs to be sort of the right content at the right time. We need content that matches the buyer's journey at every step, and it needs to be in formats salespeople can use: email, PowerPoint, telephone scripts, not 50 or 100 page analyst reports.
Interesting.
Absolutely. So let's transition from content to technology.
Yeah, I'll take a crack at the technology piece, Kelly. And it's interesting. 30 years I've been in sales, and I got a box of cards with all of my accounts in my first sales job. They were sorted by zip codes, and that's how I went out and planned my day, my sales day, traveling in a geography. The question now around the use of technology and whether that's marketing tools by HubSpot or whether that's other software that helps sellers to pull marketing pieces together, or CRM, which is by far the most popularly spoken about and used. The question is the use of this technology an installation or an implementation? And what I mean by that, is it put into the salesperson or the organization of our customers in a way that helps and enables the seller on down the path? CSO says 74% of companies who've adopted technology still show low adoption. And there's a simple reason why that's happening. The use of technology is often a one-way relationship. For instance, the salesperson is asked to go in and document everything about a sales call or an opportunity in development in the CRM, yet they're not getting good information back from that system. That's the definition of a bad relationship for human beings, too, putting something in and not getting something out, right?
So, well, and John, you know, to that point, CRM was supposed to help salespeople be more competitive, and it never really did that. It helps with pipeline management and forecasting for sure, but it never really did that. As we look to the future in a sales enablement world, what is the role of technology? It should be something we generally call guided selling, right? That again, at every phase of the buyer's journey, you've got tools and weapons that salespeople have in front of them to help them compete, knowledge that helps them bring insight to their customer. Additionally, it needs to move from single user focus to kind of best practice sharing. You know, we hear so much about onboarding, and imagine if you could take what your top salespeople know and embed it into a content management system that can be put in the hands of brand new folks. We can take, I think it's 12 months now on average before somebody is up and running. I think we can move that up quite a bit. Now, the problem is that recently it's been reported that only about 10% of organizations have a content management platform as part of their CRM. Most are still distributing content through email, or it's dispersed all out throughout the organization. So in the future, again, multiple user focused, best practice sharing, providing weapons that track with the buy cycle, and that's really where is the next phase for technology.
We have one last pillar: training and coaching. I imagine that helps quite a bit with some of what you were just talking about.
Kelly, John, it should help. It depends on how the organization approaches the training and the coaching. We all know from working in the field and developing programs for organizations that if it's training that's treated as an event, 70% of that information that you distributed or more, we know human behavior and how the mind works, unless it's built into an implementation plan, which means how companies are going to use the content, how they're going to use the technology, that the training, the delivery mechanism will simply not stick. So 70% is gone in 30 days, yet companies still spend $16 billion a year on sales training, largely in legacy practices, old school type of selling that may not even be effective. The other part that we work with our customers on is not just the training, but the implementation plan, which includes coaching.
Hmm.
a coaching program can drive up to a 30-point increase in the win rate. Yet 70% of companies do not have a formal coaching program. Hard to believe, and in this capacity, what I see often is managers. Most managers are what I call deal coaches. They will help a seller to put together the right product and service in the package for delivery and training, but they're not coaching skills. We need to make sure that in that deal coaching environment, we wrap around skill coaching, and it touches on the content that's to be used and how the technology helps to deliver it. So it's a bundle. It's not just a one and done type of scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, as I think about the third pillar of sales enablement too, the training, when we say that the very nature and role of a salesperson is changing and it's content driven and they're leveraging technology to use that content, that fundamentally changes the very nature of training, right? Training, sales training, in the time I was a VP of sales and even early on in our company, we were out there, I was buying methodology and then I was selling methodology, and it's not so much about methodology anymore. Most of us have been through a sales training class where in the end, you learn the methodology and you fill out the form, right? Fill out your purple sheet on your account. And the reality is that when we make this move to selling with knowledge that leads the customer and creates insight, it's a fundamentally different kind of training. It's not about the methodology, in my opinion, anymore. It's about how are you using knowledge to sell better. And again, the other thing with training is it needs to happen at every phase of the customer journey. And I keep hitting on this, but it's interesting that people we're taught presentation skills from one company, selling skills from another, negotiation from another, and it's the legacy practices of our industry, and that no longer works. So, in fact, if you look at organizations who really aligned their sales training to the customer journey end-to-end from qualification to close, they have a 53% win rate and enjoy 13% more premium than companies who don't. So really, sales reps in the future, they really need the content and the knowledge to help them create a buying vision as opposed to reacting to customer requests. That's been the role of salespeople a lot in the past. This customer asked me for this, I run back to corporate and get it. Creating a buying vision is an entirely different thing, and it really impacts the way we skill up and train people to do it.
You guys, that is a lot to think about. Content, technology, training. So if a company decides that they want a sales enablement function, or if they've just started sales enablement as a function within their organization, how would you recommend someone go about doing this successfully?
Kelly, if you think about the three pillars that we're talking about, content, you often think about marketing. Technology, you often think about IT. And then training can be in one of three different places. It could be in the sales department, it could be in marketing, or it could be in HR. That's one of the three usual places that I'll see it. We got to stop thinking about sales enablement and helping individuals in customer-facing roles as coming from one place. It's got to come from all three of these departments working together, IT, marketing, and whatever the function is for that sales training. They've got to work together, and it has to be thought about from an organizational standpoint as part of their strategy, part of their go-to-market strategy. It can't be a tactical piece. We'll train them here at the national sales meeting on the new product, fill them up with information, and send them into the field. It's not going to work. So we've got to get those three departments to speak. I speak to individuals in those departments who are in what I call customer-facing roles. And maybe not eyeball-to-eyeball customer-facing, but if you're in front of a screen creating content that an individual is going to be looking at who's a prospect to become a customer, you're in a customer-facing role. So we got to get those three departments to work together to make sure, as Brian described, the use of the technology covers those three capacities, and think about that in a strategic, not a tactical capacity. There's just a lot of inefficiency today in how it gets done, very simply.
Mm-hmm. And John, I would add one piece to that too, and it's budgeting. Not only are those three areas separate today, but they have three separate budgets. And one of the things we're learning is that organizations who bring these three functions together and tie it to their strategy are creating efficiencies, mm-hmm. in their budgeting process as well. To say if we work together and we use the budget from IT, the budget from sales training, and the budget from marketing to build a sales enablement platform, that it's creating a lot of financial efficiencies as well. I think there's also a question, Kelly, about so who does this organization report to? And it's not HR, it's not training, it really should be executive sales leadership. That this is now one function, again, much like supply chain management is, right? That sales enablement function is the integration of those three with someone who's leading it that's reporting to sales leadership. You know, and we say, so, you know, what happens when this cross-functional collaboration occurs? What we found is that those who invested in some sales initiative, those who had this cross-functional alignment between these functions exceeded their expectations of this investment 59% of the time, and those sort of doing it the old ad hoc way only got there 36% of the time.
Well, meeting sales initiatives or expectations around sales initiatives is important, but can you talk about some of the other benefits organizations could expect for those who have made this transformation to embracing sales enablement?
Kelly, there's not a sales leader out there who has told me that they didn't want to increase revenue. But what does it mean to increase the top line and or the margins, whatever it is? And CSO Insights hits on three areas that will ultimately help them to increase revenue and decrease the cost of sales. The first one is decreasing the ramp-up time of new hires. How long does it take us to get them truly productive? And that's one of the main benefits in the survey. That is the number one piece. The second one is to lower the turnover. Brian said earlier, if you create this content, you give the capabilities to sellers, you might lose 50% of the team. Well, maybe they're the ones that shouldn't be there. But ultimately, the objective is to lower the turnover. And then the third part is to increase the selling time. How much time does a seller get? That was the third objective that the individuals who were surveyed on this were looking for. So those three things leading up to increasing the top line and the margin.
Great. So, you guys, we're almost at the end of our time. Any final thoughts on the future of the sales role?
Yeah, Kelly, it's a great article for those who are listening in the April Harvard Business Review entitled "The New Sales Imperative," and what the sort of crux of what they're talking about in the article. These are my words: is that customers are often diagnosing their own problems and prescribing their own solutions, and then they come to the salesperson and they place that order, and the salesperson reacts to that order, and the argument that we would make is that someone who's selling a solution, technology, logistics, and supply chain management, you are much better at diagnosing customers' problems relative to what you sell and prescribing the right solution. So the role of the salesperson in the future has been written all over the place is creating that buying vision. And how do you do that? A level below that is getting much better at diagnosing current and desired state for customer organizations and then creating that buying vision and prescribing a solution that may not be the one the customer is ordering, but the one that is much better for them, and in most cases, much better for you as well.
Kelly, I would say, after reading the report and participating here today, the CSO Insight says that only slightly more than half of organizations surveyed are mapping their sales efforts to the customer's journey. I read that and I thought, are you kidding me? Is that accurate? It's not about the selling, and Brian talks about helping to create the vision for the buyer. It's about the buying and understanding where they are and creating that vision to take them to the next step. And if you're not armed for the dialogue, you're going to be left behind. Organizations will be left behind. There'll be some laggards. I don't know if this will completely manifest in 3 or 5 or 7 years, but it's already happening, as you cited at the beginning of the call, with organizations who are embracing sales enablement holistically. So that's it for me.
Amazing. Thank you both. This has been super insightful. I want to thank you both for your time.
Thank you, Kelly. Brian?